I'm going to tell you a few stories. All you have to do is listen.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another movie podcast. I legit almost said the old one.
You know what? So I was about to cut you off, and yeah. I was like, wow, that's the old show. It's the same thing.
I almost said it. I haven't made that mistake or almost that mistake in a while. Anyway, my name is Oscar, and with me today is...
The one.
The kind of only.
Raphael. That's totally not the only. Raphael. That's so stupid. Raphael, yeah.
Mm-hmm. My dad named you after himself.
Fucking useless.
Yep. Not even a junior.
We're so lazy.
Yeah.
I would. You know what? If I had junior, I would hate it. I think I would hate to be called junior.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I wouldn't like want to call
it. I don't like when people call me anything else besides my name.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. We're traditionalists. This is episode number 90. And today's review, today's show will consist of three movie reviews, kind of four actually. But two of them will be Ford versus Ferrari, and The Good Liar. So two polar opposite different kind of movies, but they're both new releases. They look exciting. Let's find out what they're all about and get into them in a bit. And then the last thing we're doing is a part of our new marathon, little mini marathon. We're doing a Twin Flicks marathon where, twin films, you know, movies that came, the two movies that came out in the, around the same time that are awfully similar in plot, maybe in other ways, descriptions, or God forbid, even actors.
Maybe even shot for shot.
Some of them, right?
Some feel that way.
And we're going to review and compare them both and see who wins out of the two. And this week's pairing is going to be Air Force One versus Executive Decision. And these are 90s movies.
I haven't remembered watching Executive Decision because I was watching it and I was like, what's going to happen next? And I was like, Oh, wait, I know the ending.
I saw it. I saw it way too long ago. Anyway. And all this stuff you can find at otherpodcast.com, which is our main base or home base or website, otherpodcast.com. You can find out last week's episode, which was, what did we pit against? Olympus Has Fallen versus White House Down. That was our first one. And I'm going to do two more after this, right before the year ends. So stay tuned for that stuff. And not to mention all of our previous marathons and bonuses and whatnot. Now, before we get into our first review, which is going to be Ford versus Ferrari, we're going to do our recent discoveries. Pretty self-explanatory. Raph, you have two movies that you saw that look way different from each other.
Totally. So I'll start off with a documentary that I saw on Netflix that I totally forgot to add from the last time show.
Okay.
But this one's called the Los Tigres del Norte at Folsom Prison.
Yeah.
This is a tribute to Johnny Cash's visit to Folsom.
Right. His infamous recording.
Infamous, yeah. And they do a whole homage thing. I think the documentary is over 50 minutes maybe, not even. Maybe more, but I didn't feel like it. Anyways, whatever. It's on Netflix. It's a Netflix original.
Okay.
Came out, I think, a month or two ago. No more than two. And shitting bricks over here. Anyways, I don't personally follow Los Tigres del Norte, but they talk about how Folsom has changed since Johnny Cash has been there, and now I think like 40-something% of the population at Folsom are Hispanic.
Really?
And they talk about, and they bring up some people who actually committed the crime, who committed crimes, right?
Yeah.
Why they're there, and they talk about it, and how people have either, lived with their actions, right, or repented, or what prison has done for them, right, and stuff like that, and or you know, some of them are like the three strike acts, for example, if you know anything about that in California, I think, or LA specifically. If you're like a guy who's committed three strikes and then you get like max penalty, so the guys
like automatically, right?
Yeah, like automatically. Yeah. So, anyways, stuff like that. It was a cool one. A lot of Spanish. Some English as well. And they did two sides because now Folsom, before Johnny Cash went, they didn't have a women's prison, but now they do have a women's prison.
Oh, okay.
So they have it. So they did also a show, you know. And it was cool to watch, even though people who like don't listen to ranchera, you know, music, banda,
should I say,
música del grupo. And all these people, it was still cool to watch. And they even brought up people who like obviously liked them a lot. They had the crowd sing. Everybody, a lot of people were into it. And it's like more like this cool, like, show. They did it obviously to tribute them, like, hey, you're not forgotten, like, just to let you guys know.
Yeah.
And it was kind of the same message that Johnny Cash went there as well.
Yeah.
50 years ago or whatever years ago that he
is,
went over there.
Is Los Tigres del Norte a type of like what are those kind of bands called? Carrera bands?
Corridos? No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
No, corridos are more, they're not that I'm aware of.
No, I mean, I know it's not the same, but.
Yeah, but they do talk about, they do hit on the subject, but they don't talk necessarily
specifics.
About, yeah, that.
Yeah.
So, and it, a lot of the stuff they talk about is how they fucked up, how someone fucked up in that life or whatever, and they're trying to repent. So it actually hits home with a lot of those people.
That makes sense.
So it's a cool documentary overall. If you don't know anything about Los Tigres del Norte, it might be a cool thing to watch.
Yeah.
And at least you'll know about it, and you'll know that they have way more fame than you could possibly think of, because they're probably one of the biggest bands in Mexico.
Yeah, definitely.
If not the biggest, I would say, but at least grupo, like that, banda. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was a cool documentary. I wouldn't give it, I mean, it's, yeah, I mean, you can take it or leave it, you personally, but I think anybody else who would want to go just for the subject matter,
yeah,
that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm actually interested.
Oh, okay, cool.
So.
All right, so that's my first movie. My second movie is, now that we have the Disney Plus-ing, Disney Plus and Thrust.
Wow.
Yeah, did not do that, but neither did The Lady and the Tramp, which is the movie I saw. And it's the, not the original, it's the remake, although it is out of the vault, because everything is.
Actually, not Thor Ragnarok yet.
No, so some stuff that's still on Netflix,
yeah,
they're waiting for.
Yeah. December or something, they said.
Yeah. Believe me, I know. So yeah, they're... As Lady of the Trap, they did a live-action version of it, and I thought it was actually really well made. It was kind of fun to watch. It was a nice little wholesome movie to watch. It was all, I think if you've ever seen any movie with dogs in it now, or pets in general, it's all voiceover stuff, and it's all in their head, and when they talk to a human being, they're like, oh, you're cute, you're barking, you know,
whatever. Homeward Bound.
Stuff like that. Very, very much so. Homeward Bound did that first, right?
Yeah.
They stick to the same thing here. Nothing looked too crazy CGI'd here. So everything looked actually really, really well made.
Okay. No Lion King'd?
No Lion King. So yeah, it was actually a fun movie. It stuck true to its roots. I haven't seen Lady and the Tramp in years. And I would say, like, I must have been in the barely two digits. So like 10, 12?
Yeah.
And early, the latest.
Yeah.
So it's been a while since I've seen that movie. Almost 20 years, I would say. So, that being said, though, I still had fun watching it. I know you hate remakes and all this stuff, but typically. I would put it around Jungle Book's status.
Yeah, which I enjoyed.
I know you did. So that's why I say it.
But I also enjoy it because I never I never saw the first one a lot.
I think I enjoy
times.
This a lot also for that reason, because I don't remember it that much, and it was cool, and it was well made.
Right.
Some stuff did feel a little unbelievable. They changed some stuff also, you know, like along with the story.
Yeah.
But it was cool. Obviously, there's no Siamese cats, realistic.
Right.
But you know what? But that's fine, and you're allowed to change that thing. You don't want to make everything exactly.
Right.
Stuff like that should be made changes. Like, you can just pick two cats that look alike, or that are twins. It's not that big a deal.
Yeah, not a big deal.
So yeah, that was Lady and the Tramp on Disney Plus. It's only available on Disney Plus.
So how trampy is she?
Well, he's the tramp.
How trampy is he? I don't know anything about this. I forgot all about it.
Pretty much a tramp, yeah.
Okay.
yeah, it's just he's a lone wolf kind of guy.
You know? I mean, tramp as in a hobo. They don't mean
very much so. Yes. Okay. He's a hobo. Yeah.
Got it. All right, so that's on Disney Plus and Thrust, apparently, which I have not done yet either. Netflix and chill way too much anyway. All right, I have three movies here, all three polar opposite movies. First one here I got is I watched Crawl as part of our...
Oh, I saw that earlier.
I have this list of movies I'm trying to catch up to for the year, before the year ends, I should say.
Do tell me how you...
Crawl is a young woman, while attempting to save her father during a Category 5 hurricane, finds herself trapped in a flooding house and must fight for her life against alligators, not crocodiles, alligators. And this movie came out earlier in the year. It's part of the company who did this, you know, Sam Raimi production company, I believe, Alexander Aja, Kaya Scodelario, and Barry Pepper star in this movie. And this is a fun movie. I had a lot of fun watching it. It has very nice suspense stuff. It has very nice use of close spaces. There's this whole thing about, like, they're stuck between, like, a rock and a hard place constantly. And the movie
and they keep getting closer.
The movie takes advantage of that, is using it as the main device as to, they're still alive, but they have to get out, but they can't get out. And, you know, the injuries that they sustain, the water that's rising, gives you that sense of, like, fuck, you need to get the fuck out of here.
Right.
But how the fuck are you, you know, and these alligators actually do some damage, you know. Not everything is realistic in this thing, but, like,
no.
People do get killed. It's pretty savage. Like, the idea of being out there, you know, where they want to escape to is their demise as well. It's a really nice, structured horror movie, or suspense. I don't know what you call it. But, yeah, I had fun watching it. it's not like a wow kind of movie, but it's fun to watch. I think anyone can enjoy it for his suspense stuff. The alligators are vicious. They're pretty cool. So I recommend it. Crawl, available to rent and buy now. The other movie I got here is a Wuxia movie, which I will not take too long to explain. But essentially, a Wuxia, this movie, let's see. I'm going to read the long one just because it's a lot of...
please do tell me Wuxia.
A lot of shit. No, Wuxia is the type of movie it is. It's like a specific kind of Chinese movie that has the kind of martial arts that's in it. I believe that's roughly what it means.
Kind of like Ip Man stuff?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, perfect.
Exactly. Set during China's Three Kingdoms era, AD 220, the story of a great king and his people who will be expelled from their homeland and will aspire to claim it. The king, violent and ambitious of mysterious methods and motives, his general, a visionary who yearns to win the final battle but needs to prepare his plans in secret, the women of the palace who struggle to find redemption in a world where they have no place, a commoner called Lord of All the World will be the characters around who turn the inexorable forces of this story. And this movie is made by Yimou Zhang. I don't know if I mispronounced something. I apologize. He did that big movie Hero.
Oh, okay.
That was his biggest movie that made
that was
it here.
A good movie.
To Curse of the Golden Flower, which I saw. House of Flying Daggers, which I saw.
Those are all good movies.
Yes, he did all those. Those are all Wuxia movies, I believe. He also did The Great Wall with Matt Damon, but I never saw that
not
one.
Like it, a movie.
No, but
you didn't see that?
No, I never saw it.
I thought you saw it with me.
No, I never
saw
it.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Who'd you take? That was Blosker.
I didn't see it in theaters.
Okay.
At least not to my knowledge.
Right. And this movie's pretty fun. It has a lot of intrigue. Fucking, it's so gorgeous, Ralph. Oh, my God. The movie's so painted. Everywhere they move, every room they're in looks like a team of 50,000 people worked on it. You know, it all looks like everyone's standing in these awesome portraits all the time. Even when they're fighting, even when they're moving or yelling or eating or whatever, it looks insanely exquisite. Even the shitty like cavern areas that they're in this movie, there's like underground caverns that they visit.
You make me interested in a movie.
It's so good. It has the Grandmaster kind of visuals. If you know the details of that, the color of that, it has a very similar style of look anyway.
Okay. I like the Grandmaster a lot.
Yes, we love that movie a lot.
Did we watch the Chinese version? No, we wanted to, right?
No, I think we did see the Chinese version.
Oh, that's right. We did want to watch the English version. Yeah. Remember they edited something else.
Yeah, they added the Bruce Lee thing. Anyway, and this movie has a really... It's basically a soap opera season into one episode. Nice. So some of the stuff that's in there, it does get grand and dramatic, but it totally works out in the style, in the vein of how the movie begins. It's like you know something's gonna happen. You just don't know. The main thing about this movie is that when you know all the players, which takes about an hour in, when you know all the players and then the plan either does go through or it goes through but never goes through all the way kind of thing, you're like, damn, like I still don't know where it's gonna, it could go anywhere.
Oh, that's so cool.
And it has that feeling for me for sure, and I did not know how it was gonna end the way it did. It was amazing. So I recommend it highly. It's Shadow. It's came out last year in China, but it's releasing this year technically. So.
Right.
It's on Netflix right now, actually. But so check
that's
it
right,
out
you
if
did
you
tell me that.
If you are interested. I saw a movie that now it's in theaters. It's my last one here. It's Taika Waititi's latest film, Jojo Rabbit.
Oh man, I was looking forward to watching this movie. please tell me good things. Hopefully.
Oh, it's so good. This might make my top 10, maybe.
Really?
It's so good.
Oh, I hate myself for not watching it.
A young boy in Hitler's army finds out his mother is hiding a Jewish girl in their home. That's the simplest plot. There's more to it. I almost want to read more, but I'm not gonna. The stars are Roman Griffith Davis as Jojo, the little 12-year-old boy, Thomasin McKenzie, Scarlett Johansson, and Taika Waititi are the main players here. You also have Sam Rockwell, Alfie Allen, who plays Reek, rhymes with Meek. Rebel Wilson is in this movie too. Archie Yates, the little boy who his best friend. This is such a heartwarmingly funny and dark movie.
I mean, the plot.
Right. Yeah. The world setting alone makes it hella dark, but they make fun of it. It makes fun of itself so much. Like, knowing that the Third Reich does fall and all that helps along the funniness of it, right?
Yeah.
But everyone in this movie, virtually everyone, is on the side of Hitler.
I'm very proud of them not afraid of making a movie like this. Because I feel like still very taboo.
No, I know. I've been saying this. Like, we need a... we need movies that kind of tap this. This is like a small step forward still, but we need like movies like to, or and books or whatever, to start like painting the other pictures of everything that happened.
Yes,
there.
Very
because
much so.
Right now it's still there's still the butt of the joke and there's still like the grand villain and all that. And I'm not saying this movie doesn't have that side, but this movie really has a world filled with people that are completely on the Third Reich side. And what does that look like? Well, you know, obviously it's an exaggerated world. It's extra funny. Everything's a little funny because it's all through the boy's perspective.
Yeah.
And he's wildly imaginative and all that.
Not shocking.
He totally, you know, he finds this girl in the cupboard and she convinces him that, hey, if you tell on me, I'm going to tell them that your mom hit me and then she's going to be gone too and you're not going to be with anyone.
Right.
So that's what stops him from telling the authorities. But at the same time, he hates you so much. He doesn't know why, but he hates them. And he wants to write the definitive book on Jews, so he's like interviewing. And this friendship starts growing. It's so adorable.
Yeah.
It's so good. It's so heartwarming. The ending will kill you emotionally, meaning. It's so good. I liked it a lot. And Scarlett Johansson, who's not in it very much. I was surprised she was in it at all. I did not expect to see her on the screen when she popped up. She plays the mother. And she's pretty good, too. Man, she's pretty good. I think you like
her.
Okay.
Damn. Well, I hope I can go watch it. Maybe if it's still available this weekend, I'll go.
Yeah. I did not expect it to hit me the way that I was enjoying the comedy and all that. And Taika Waititi as Hitler is hilarious because I can't unsee also the vampire he played in What We Do in the Shadows, the Prancy vampire. It all works out really well. That's a weird blend, but it's a nice blend.
Damn.
It's like when someone combines like Reese's and peanut butter or peanut butter and chocolate for the first time. You're like, what? This shouldn't work. Kind of like that. So, yeah, I highly recommend Jojo Rabbit. It's on theaters right now. Check it out before the year ends, if you can. That'd be great. So that's it for our recent discoveries. We're going to take in a little break here. We're going to go into our first review, which is going to be Ford versus Ferrari. We have two versuses this
vroom,
week.
Vroom.
You know that, Ralph?
Yes, technically, yes.
Yeah, technically. So find out what that's about. Stay with us.
So the great Carroll Shelby is going to build a car to beat Ferrari. With a Ford.
Correct.
And how long did you tell them you needed? 200 or 300 years?
90 days.
Ford hates guys like us because we're different.
Well, we heard he's difficult.
Ken?
No, Ken's a puppy dog.
It's awful, but there's a problem. The computer will find it.
You can get some Scotch tape and a ball of wool.
What are they doing?
Making your car faster.
Ah! That's more like it!
10 miles.
It's not a Ford, man.
We're on the verge of something, and now you tell me that I can't have the best man in the world behind the wheel?
Give me one reason why I don't fire everyone starting with you.
Well, sir,
we're lighter, we're faster.
So nice!
That don't work, we're nastier.
Go ahead, girl. Go to war.
You got a plan.
It's high risk.
I thought the whole point was to win the damned race.
If this were a beauty pageant, we just lost.
Looks aren't everything.
Carroll Shelby and driver Ken Miles battle corporate interference, the laws of physics, and their own personal demons to build a revolutionary race car for Ford and challenge Ferrari at the 24-hour Le Mans in 1966. This is a biopic. The movie's called Ford vs. Ferrari. This is a movie directed by James Mangold, written by Jez Butterworth.
Okay.
And John Henry Butterworth and Jason Keller, starring Matt Damon, Christian Bale, John Bernthal,
Josh fucking Lucas,
Caitrona Balfe, or Balfe, Josh Lucas, Noah Jupe, Tracy Letts, and maybe we can keep going, I guess, but it doesn't really matter. After that, it's other stuff.
Sure.
So Ford v Ferrari. Yeah. I'll go first on this one.
Okay.
I'll let you go second. I heard that opening weekend, I think it crushed box office of whatever else was going against. I think this is the big
one. Based on the old people that were there on my screening, yeah.
You know what? I was one of the younger people in my screen.
Definitely, sure. Yeah. Bottom 10.
So I like, I for sure like cars. I like this. I like the subject matter is up my alley 100%. So this is one of the reasons I was looking forward to this movie. That and also I kind of wanted to see the whole, you know, think about, because the Ford GT is a humongously popular car for this reason. This is what it was created for, and this is when, how it won, you know, how they show it. Spoiler alert. So I actually did like the movie. I thought it was, first I'll say it right away. The title, it's kind of, I get why it's called that. It sells more tickets, I guess. Maybe.
Probably.
But at the same time, it shouldn't be called Ford or Ferrari. It should be called something, I don't know, Fords or Assholes and whatever. It talks a lot about American, like, corporate business. It talks actually a lot about, like, just American America and how kind of the idea, what companies are trying to sell and what, like, a small startup is trying to, it's weird, not startup, but like a smaller company, like, has to do, you know? Being Carol Shelby, who is a sports car designer, and he used to, you know, design his own cars and stuff like that, who obviously now they have a Shelby Mustang, which is a very popular car that they do, you know, with his name and everything like that. And Ford, which is a gigantic company who, like, just, you know, is a cookie cutter, makes cookie cutter images of everything that they have, right?
Yeah.
Everything has to be exact from the prior one. So it's interesting, right? And then you have this. They have this combination. So I like the movie overall, how it went. I thought the movie focused a lot on Ken Miles.
The actual race car driver,
which is actually really cool. And that's kind of why I hate the fact the movie's called Ford vs. Ferrari. I almost feel like it should be called, like, Shelby and Miles.
Yeah.
Like, it would have been a cooler movie. I think it would have been cooler to watch that. And you could put that up with cars in the background, and anybody who knows cars knows Shelby. Like, Shelby's big enough. Yeah. And anybody who really knows racing knows Miles. So it would be interesting, you know?
Because this is all two events based on things.
Yes, exactly. Right.
Same result, different journey.
Right, very much so, yeah.
How do we know?
So I liked it overall. I had fun watching the movie. I was definitely the younger person, or if not one of the younger people.
Yeah, Matt Damon is a big crowd pleaser still.
He still is. You know what? And that's cool.
Yeah.
He's obviously attracted.
The Martian gave him a lot of also kudos.
I was about to say that. I was like, ever since The Martian, I think The Martian...
I mean, a lot of movies.
The Bournes for sure. But I think The Martian is one of those movies, the most recent movie.
Yeah, he revitalizes it every time.
That has done his career, has done good for his career.
He refreshes mana crystals every once in a while. The Martian refreshes mana crystals.
Yeah, for sure.
So he's like...
And I think it did both good for both younger crowds and older crowds.
Definitely. He's an all-rounder. He's a success story for sure.
He's a rounder. Interesting.
Rounders. Wow.
Jesus.
Man, this movie, I shouldn't say it's bad, because I got exactly what I expected. I didn't get any more, and I don't know if I got any less.
Did you leave the theater wanting to drive your car faster?
No.
Okay.
No, this is not Fast and Furious.
Well, I'm just curious.
No, it did not make me want to do that. It made me look out for other people who might have. But they're, again, old people, so I don't know. Maybe they were going normal speed. Normal speed limit would be like they're fast, right?
That'd be great. The world works.
There's stuff in this movie I enjoyed. There's other stuff I didn't. And I think the title is completely mistitled. But also, like, if I was an exec, I may have to go with this title too, because I know it'll bring the most seats in. It'll have to. Right. It has to. It's like one of those things I can't blame them for, but also, like, I should, because it's a piece of art. It diminishes the art. But whatever. It's like calling an abstract painting untitled or something. Okay, that's fine. But if it's a painting of a portrait of an apple or an apple, and you call it
untitled
Lady Stormair, and you're like, what? That's not a what?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, but that aside, I think the acting is pretty fun. Christian Bale is play a really good asshole. I like him.
Yeah. Good British asshole.
British asshole. Yes, he can do that. I think he played that junkie in the Fighter. I think I saw some energy similar to that in his performance.
I would say
the same,
so.
Yeah. But similar. Different kind of person completely, but still. He likes doing these things where he's like playing a very specific role. Like, he plays the idea, like his profession. It makes you think of his profession really well, because, like, there's a, like, he's basically a stuntman in the 70s or something, where, like, anything goes. They could die. Injury is bound to happen. You know, it's like they're daredevils, right? He's Evel Knievel without the popularity, right? And and like the idea for speed. And I know the movie tries to romanticize that speed that they talk about a few times in the movie. How if you go at 200 something miles per hour, you feel like you're floating, or all this slows down. They talk about this in monologues.
7,000 or what's it called?
RPMs or something. RPMs, yeah. And like, okay, that's cool and all, but really, you just want to go fast. You like the danger of it. That excites you, gets you hard. Maybe I don't know. And that stuff is fine. He portrays it really well. And Matt Damon portrays a really like not a has been, but like a businessman who used to be like Christian Bale's character, right? That's the idea of him.
Yeah.
I do wish they explored their friendship more.
So do I, yeah.
A lot more, actually. Well, I would have liked more.
What's funny is that you have a picture of them, war veterans, war heroes. Or not war heroes, but war buddies.
In the same picture?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I knew one of them for sure. I
could have sworn it was their war hero, their war buddies. Yeah. You're like, oh, I can see why they tolerate each other, and I can see why they have like a friendship, right?
Right.
And they just, like, besides the picture, they never bring it up.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't sure, so therefore...
I think it would have done the scene towards the end of the movie a lot more powerful. Not that that scene wasn't already good. Yeah. I think it would have been a more impactful scene.
Yeah, I also wanted to see this movie because I was excited. The thing that did not exceed my expectations, because the rest of this movie looks like a regular crowd-pleasing movie, is that James Mangold directed it, who did Logan and did fucking with the Wolverine, and he did... Copland, he did Walk the Line, which wasn't like amazing, but I thought was better than this movie, in my opinion. And I like James Mangold overall. He did 310 to Yuma.
You know
what's my favorite?
What's funny is that you talk about Walk the Line. I just saw that recently.
Yeah.
And Logan, I think, is probably his most artistic, I would say, that I've seen recently of his.
Maybe.
The Walk the Line one is a very. There's no. No muss, no fuss.
Yeah.
You know, and I think I feel the same kind of way in this
movie. I would compare these two movies.
I feel the same way, and as in, like, they're both biopics, right?
Yeah.
So, it is interesting. When now you say that he did Walk the Line, because I totally forgot that he did that. Mm-hmm. It does bring up the fact that he at least, there's really little to complain about the movie.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. But at the same time, we're complaining that it could have been a little bit better, but...
Like, yeah, and the Dewey Cox story made fun of that movie a lot.
Who?
Walk Hard.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's why they named it that. Because of that movie. For me, 310 to Yuma and Logan are really, really great movies. And I've always loved him for that. He has a lot of credit for me in my bank, so to speak. I watch his movies, you know. But this one wasn't... it was just like... I felt like this is a pay-the-bills kind of movie. Or maybe not. I mean, I don't know what he likes. I don't know. Pretend to know. But that's why I was excited. But that's the only letdown I had, because I didn't get more than a run-of-the-mill feel kind of movie, especially biopic, especially race car. You know, there's not that many... I mean, there's a reason why there's not a shit ton of race car movies out there.
Yeah.
It's because, I don't think audiences can stand more than one every few years, right?
No, yeah.
I was thinking of the last one I really enjoyed, and it was Rush. And I really did enjoy that movie.
Yeah.
I remember liking that movie more than I like this one today.
That was a big name director as well. Who was that?
Ron Howard. And Chris Hemsworth was in it. But that was a really good rivalry. That was an actual legit rivalry.
That's something that you hard focus on that.
Right.
Right. And
the movie focused on the right thing.
And I feel like if you were to make this, name it something different or what, something, I don't know, whatever, and you were to just the movie focused a little bit more on something. And instead of just saying what happened, which is cool, that's not the end of it, but it would have been, I think it could have been a better movie.
Yeah.
Overall.
Yeah, and this one is...
It's not a bad movie, yeah.
Like, if this one focused on, like equal parts, like, they had the main engineer, designer, and the race car driver in the Ferrari's Italy side, like, going through everything, like, what are they going to competing with? Maybe there's, like, they're trying to figure out and anticipate the Americans. Or even better, trying to, like, show their, like, well, we won 5 times in a row, you know, all we got to do is just do a slightly better job or whatever. We don't have to, like, seeing the folly of their pretentiousness, maybe, or whatever.
Right.
But this movie completely only focuses on making the Shelby vehicle and having... Bale drive the car, and it was fun sometimes, but I don't know, it wasn't super satisfying in the end.
Yeah. I thought for me, so I'm not a gearhead per se.
Me either.
But I do appreciate, and I do watch a lot of shows like that. I mean, I used to love watching Top Gear when it was out, when it was the original cast. I do watch a lot of, like, I used to watch a lot of Restoring Cars, you know, stuff like that.
Oh, yeah?
I Pimp My Ride, even stuff like that. Like, I like watching stuff like that. I like watching a car getting rebuilt or worked on or whatever the case is, and performing better, or even just tuning something. I love Rush, for example. I like movies like this overall.
Yeah.
Like Days of Thunder, I'll watch any day of the week. I don't know. It's just the thrill of it. I've always, and I like driving. That's the big thing. I like driving. So this movie was actually, I enjoyed it because it hits a lot of my, just my likes. There's no reason why I shouldn't like this movie unless if you fucking butchered it. But he didn't.
No, he didn't.
You know? So, I do, like I said, I do have my little complaints about it overall. Like, the focus is that he could have focused on. And, what I did like is that, one thing that the movie did well that was trying to get you, I don't know if you got this at all, was get you the sense of I guess coolness or of how kind of important but slash fun at the same time and cool. Cool is going to be an adjective I use here, through the perspective of his son. Because you see they bring in the son quite often for Ken Miles, right?
Yeah, the Miles' family is there a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
Not Shelby's family, though.
Not Shelby's. Who's the son? I'm trying to think.
Jupe.
Yeah, Noah Jupe. You see a lot of the stuff, a lot of his wonder, right? A lot of his learning about his, you know, the making the map, making the thing and stuff like that. Or even watching his dad drive the course at the airfield, right? And stuff like that, doing that. Which is also, I find that I love how we're in a period piece, right? Because this is like, what?
60s,
right?
Yeah.
Way less air traffic. You could just use the fucking airport like that.
Oh, yeah, right.
There's just like no traffic anywhere. And this is like California, right? You're talking about like the most gridlocked city, LA, right? The most gridlocked city ever, everywhere, right? In the States, anyway. And then airports are consistently busy. There's no fucking way nobody was going to lend you any space anywhere to fucking run laps or whatever,
right?
You know, so it's kind of funny that you see like different times, right?
Yeah.
But I did like the fact that they try to bring the sense of wonderment, the sense of like kind of pizzazz through his perspective. They do that, but they also do that like, it's like a hindrance. They do it, and they do it also for like accidents, for little things. And you're like, oh no, like this is a bigger deal than it needs to be because of the son, you know, or because of the family member.
Yeah. Well, that's funny you say that because, and I almost feel like we should probably get into spoilers pretty soon, but I don't think, I thought the movie didn't need the family.
Yeah, you didn't need it, but at the same time, the fact that it was there didn't, I don't think it did a disservice.
Right. The wife wasn't like just like, you know, doting or waiting on him or being a shrill even. Except for that one weird scene where she's like driving fast in the but she wasn't like, she wasn't Skylar, right? Skylar White, right? Just the go to example. But that's, she wasn't funny like that at all. So they didn't like fuck it up, but I don't think it was necessary either.
Yeah.
You know,
you could trim the
fat. Especially when you, it's like the movie is strangely biased because they show Shelby's, not point of view, but his side of the business, what he has to accomplish in order for the driver to accomplish, for Miles, I mean. Yeah. But we see none of the movie doesn't focus on his family. What's he going through? You know, we know a little based on the opening.
Yeah.
Where, like, he gets panic attacks or he has, like, a cardiac problem. He can't race like that anymore.
No, he can't race, yeah.
Right. He won the thing, Le Mans. He was the only American, the first one, I mean, that won it. But, you know, that is, as far as success goes, he can't do what Miles can do now.
No.
Right. And that's as much as
we know about him. It is, I think it's anxiety.
The rest, yeah. Anxiety, maybe? Yeah, I don't know. But I think we should probably get into spoilers before we speak more of this movie, because I think we're dangerously close. So let's do spoilers for Ford versus Ferrari. Ferrari, starting now.
Because we've been thinking wrong. Ferrari. Now, they've won 4 out of the last 5 Le Mans. We need to think like Ferrari.
Ferrari makes fewer cars in a year than we make in a day. We spend more on toilet paper than they do on their entire output. You want us to think like them.
Enzo Ferrari will go down in history as the greatest car manufacturer of all time. Why? Is it because he built the most cars? It's because of what his cars mean. Victory. Ferrari wins at Le Mans. People, they want some of that victory. Now, what if the Ford badge meant victory? And meant it where it counts, with the first group of 17-year-olds in history with money in their pockets?
This would take years, decades, to test and develop a race team capable of taking out Ferrari.
Ferrari's bankrupt. Enzo has spent every lira he's got chasing perfection. You know something? He got there. But now he's broke.
Ken Miles dies.
Yeah.
No. So what did you think about that? What did you think about the death? I mean, I knew it happened, so I know.
I feel like the movie should have ended when the race ended.
And I think it should have ended, and then you added Ken Miles. And I get why they did it. It's not that huge of a deal.
Yeah. No, you're right. It's not.
Especially, you know what? This is why the name of the title bothers me, when you focus so much on Ken Miles.
Yes.
And you focus so much on Shelby, and then you have this scene, because it's obviously impactful, and I feel like you could have fixed a lot. Like, I don't know.
I didn't like it. It wasn't like Lord of the Rings Part 3, the whole with the 50 endings. But I didn't expect it, and it wasn't like a good, oh, this is unexpected kind of feeling. It was like, what? Kind of unexpected kind of feeling. So I wasn't totally like moved by it. I mean, it sucked that he died like less than a year later. It speaks to the dangers that these race car drivers have. But I already knew that. So I already felt that before. Hell, yeah. when the race starts, finally, it takes forever to start, by the way. It feels like it took a little longer. Two cars crash right away. Like, they flip and shit. I'm like, what the fuck? Yeah. You know, like, so it's the danger is there. We knew the whole time. A text could have said it, and I didn't have to see it. Or see the fucking boy's expression, you know, or whatever. Right. And that whole thing about the ending with Shelby manning up to go to the house, to Kate Blanchett's understudy's house. She looks just like her, Jesus. It's like they tried to get Kate Blanchett, but they couldn't. And they got this other girl.
Yeah.
I'm like, why is this here? I mean, I don't really get it. Because, again, they didn't explore their background so much, or like why they need the friendship. Yeah. I thought it was just they knew each other, and he knows his importance, and at the same time Miles knows that he can't fuck this up, like he needs this.
Yeah.
So like, I thought that's what it was, more than it was like best friends kind of, I don't know, whatever. And then when the boy says, yeah, we're friends, I'm like, yeah, I guess the movie told me that, but I don't know if I felt it, but whatever.
Yeah,
sure. You know,
that is like I would say that's like my biggest problem with the movie.
Yeah,
which is sad, because the movie's trying to just wrap up history, you know, and just kind of punctuate everything and finish it off,
right?
You know, and then add a little bit of its own thing, right? Which is the whole thing about going, trying to say bye, and says bye to the kid instead, or I'm here for whatever, and you know,
closure. I mean, I would just change whatever you need to make a story better. I mean, I know people say like, well, it's not based on something. I'm like, yeah, but let me give you a very recent example. Green Book, which won Best Picture for some reason it won. Is it called Green Book? Right? That's the one?
Yeah.
They changed every single dynamic in that movie. They were not like that. They were not like that at all. It was written by a racist guy. You know, like, it wasn't, like, it's so insane. Right. It's such a fake history thing. And everyone adores it and shit, stupidly. I don't know why.
Yeah.
And it got the credentials, I guess. It got the Tony, I almost said, the golden statue. And really, it's stupid, weird. But they change history. We just change it here. Make it more exciting. I don't know.
Yeah, I know.
You think Rush was exactly that? I mean, come on. Okay, whatever.
I know.
Here's another thing I didn't buy at all, and I did not see the severity. I didn't see the weight of this at all either. And it was like, the whole thing about like this, the vice president Beebe, his shit with
interference
with Miles, his interference. Is Ford in charge of this fucking company or not? Because he gives Shelby in charge of this fucking department two different times. And both times,
they take it away from him.
BB is suddenly in charge.
Yeah.
Does he not know? I mean, it undercuts everything Tracy Letts' character, who's Ford, for the third or whatever.
The second, right.
For the second. His authority. He doesn't have any authority.
No.
He has nothing. Right. So, like, I don't know what the movie was trying to do there, but it did not do it right because I didn't give a shit. And so when they try to do that switcheroo at the end, like, they should all come in at the same time and this triple line thing, I was like, bullshit, don't do that. And then he did it? I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? I'm like, why are you taking... What are you... I don't understand what do they see that I'm not seeing, or what is the movie trying to say that did not convey to me?
Well, I think the movie, that aspect... Don't get me wrong, I wholeheartedly agree with everything you just said. Except for the fact that that is meant like growth as a character, I guess. They were trying to do for Miles came out.
A different thing.
Right. Well, the fact that you can't really pick a different thing at that aspect because he dies, right? Like the next scene or the next two scenes or whatever.
Worse.
It is what it is. It was more of a he's finally letting go of the fact that it's a one-man operate. He's living this one-man operation his whole life, and he's not. And it's almost like saying thank you to Shelby, right? Yeah. And it's almost saying, like, I'm willing to bend, since you bent so much for me,
yeah,
the least I can do is be the reciprocating friend. It's like the friend who always asks.
Why did Shelby give a shit also?
What do you mean?
Why did Shelby try to toe the line there? Like, why is this order important? I never bought it. I never bought the premise of where... I mean, I understand that him growing up to be a team player, that makes sense. He's always the Tom Cruise in that...
Why does Shelby care?
Yeah. Why does anyone give a shit about what BB says?
What else?
Money. Or Ford, for that matter, because his authority means nothing anyway. Yeah. They're going to win the race, which they did at that point.
Yeah.
Or not.
I don't know. Financial security?
I would have said, like, I'm here to win the race. I won it.
Right.
Click.
Right. Financial security? I don't know. I don't know what else to say.
Financial security.
I mean, yeah. What else is it?
I don't know. It just seems ridiculous.
Yeah.
It did not look right. And it didn't feel right. Nothing there looked right to me. It was so ridiculous. Because of that, he got second place on a technicality. And that's another thing I don't understand about people. Like, you saw what he did, right? Everyone in the world knows that he slowed down so all three can go in together, and they still give it to McLaren? No. That's stupid.
McLaren, no, the other guy. Yeah.
The driver, McLaren. Wasn't it the driver? Yeah.
I don't think so. McLaren's a car. But
no, that's the guy. That's where his fame comes from. Apparently, that's what I heard.
Huh?
McLaren his fame comes from that. He's that driver. He's the original guy who the McLaren's named after.
No, because...
I thought it was.
No, because Shelby drives McLaren cars... And that's how he wins.
Oh, I thought when they said McLaren, they were talking about the race car driver's like design. No,
that's how he wins Le Mans.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I didn't know that. But the driver's name was McLaren. I mentioned it a couple times. Maybe I'm wrong.
Really didn't care who
the other driver won.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't understand what everyone... I mean, everyone knows who won. Why give it to the other guy? It's so ridiculous. It's so dumb. I don't understand this world. And this movie made me think that. And I'm like, why would they do this?
Yeah.
So, like, and then they, you know, they put that end thing at, you know, they still have text at the end, even though I didn't think they needed it because they showed his death and all that. But, like, they put that text about him being in some Hall of Fame thing for race car driver.
Yeah.
I'm like, great. I don't care. He didn't get it when he was alive.
Right.
That's what I said. And probably Chubby was that, too, because they probably did it way later anyway.
Probably.
Knowing how history works out and they reshape history. So whatever, the movie didn't make me feel very good. I mean, up until like when he actually beat the Ferrari guy, like that whole race thing, that whole sequence of stuff, that was cool. I like that overall. I actually like the Daytona thing too a lot. That was very nice. The sun thing with doing the race car, like exactly how he plans it out, that was really nice, and the foreshadowing.
Yeah,
that was all
everything
very cool.
Leading up to it.
Yeah, some of those visuals are great. Yeah. The way it was set up, the inside the car scenes were really good. The music was pretty fine. It's hard to say, oh yeah, all the stuff they did was really good too, and I hate just dismissing it, but that stuff is like, they should have gotten right, so they did. It's just that we're harping on the stuff that didn't. Because this movie is a crowd pleaser and it's leaning towards a more positive side for audiences, so we're going to show you like the dark side a little more than the light side. If this movie was like underseen or something, I would highlight more of the positives to tell people, like, well, this movie's 50-50.
Right.
All right. But yeah, anyway, that's how I feel overall. Anything you want to add?
I don't know. I can't really think of anything else to add.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, I would just love to see the Ferrari thing more.
Yeah, more. Me too.
Just
I
more.
Agree.
Just more. Yeah. You know? But because even the little, the movie had little flashes of seeing the cultural differences, right? Yeah. Between a Ford and Ferrari, right? Like, you know, because I guess the owners stay for a certain amount of time in the beginning.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ford has to leave in an ostentatious helicopter for dinner with his glamorous wife, right? And Ferrari's like.
Well, what's funny is that Ford leaves in a helicopter,
right?
And Ferrari leaves in his own car.
Right.
Made in his own factory.
Right, in his own factory, right? The idea of that. It's just polar differences in culture, right? Some of ideals, how they look at things,
right.
What kind of exits and entrances they want to feel like I have to make.
Right.
Makes Ford look, again, more ridiculous.
Very much so.
But it was very nice overall. Okay, so that's Ford versus Ferrari, which seems to be mixed to positive, like a positive mixed, because the movie is what I expected overall.
Okay.
All right, so we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we shall review our second film, which is The Good Liar, which we haven't seen at this recording yet, so I don't know what that's about yet, so we're going to find out together here. Stay with us.
So tell me, have you done this a lot? Met people on the computer service? Don't you find it's always the same?
You mean the anticipation followed by the letdown? But I tell myself, brace up, this time it will be different. Which is why I must now confess to you a deception on my part. My name is in fact not Brian, it's Roy.
To the future.
How much do you think she's worth?
Nearly £3 million.
You're going to take the lot?
You bloody bet I'm going to take it all.
Is that your grandson?
It's too soon to be getting so close to him.
I've grown very fond of you.
Do you know who you are? You're the only person on this planet who makes me feel that I'm not alone.
I know things about you. Who you really are.
You don't want to do this, Roy. It's the game. It's the adrenaline rush. What if it is?
Career car artist Roy Courtney can hardly believe his luck when he meets a well-to-do widow, Betty McLeish, online. As Betty opens her home and life to him, Roy is surprised to find himself caring about her, turning what should be a cut-and-dry swindle into a most treacherous tightrope walk of his life, according to this description.
Well, yeah, kind of a weird.
Kind of weird, yeah, for sure.
Description, yeah.
This movie is The Good Liar. This is written and directed by Bill Condon, written by Jeffrey Hatcher, and it's a novel by Nicholas Searle. Searle? Whatever. starring the great Helen Mirren.
And the equally
just as great Ian McKellen, also other people, Russell Tovey, Jim Carter, Mark Lewis Jones, really everybody else is kind of super side characters, so I think we just leave it at that. Those are probably the couple that we see the most.
Yeah, definitely. They're pretty much the stand.
The Good Liar. What did you think, con artist movie? What did you think of this movie?
I didn't know exactly how con-like it was gonna be. Like I don't know if it was like a heist thing or, you know, the trailer was definitely a lot about them two talking and stuff. So I guess it was more con-like, but I wasn't sure if what kind of thing was gonna happen. But it was more plotty than I anticipated, and it was more con-like. So I loved it. As a con movie, con artist movie, I was surprised by how much I was enjoying it. And these two actors are man, they're hella heavyweights. They're really good. They work well together. And just like, it's funny because he's lying the whole time. You know from the beginning, it's not a spoiler at all. He's, you know, trying to get her millions. And he even doesn't know how much is she worth, really. But he knows that she's worth a lot. And throughout the movie...
Yeah, I believe he thinks it's not even a million or something at first.
Yeah, the movie constantly plays with your affections and the tensions between every conversation they have. Because, you know, the movie mainly follows the man, the con artist, and Roy. And but when they get together, it's like, you want, on one hand, for her to, like, not say too much, or you're trying to see where the ball's going to drop. Like, when is it going to put the hook in for whatever it's going to reveal to steal her millions? Or, you know, or what's, or if he's, or if this is one of those movies where, like, he's redeemed, you know, like a lot of con artist movies are, you know, like the last con or the old con gets, falls in love or finds meaning in something or whatever. Because Roy's pretty ruthless for an 80 whatever year old man.
Yeah,
or
he
70
is very
something.
Ruthless, actually.
Pretty ruthless. He does not fuck around. He has like a little crew that's dependable. He knows how to run them. He looks like he knows how to run them. You know, anyway. Yeah, this movie is very enjoyable. What did you think?
Yeah, I would agree. Enjoyable is a good word for this movie. I love a good car artist movie. I think we always have in general.
Yeah, Matchstick Man and Get the Sting. And
I couldn't think of the title. I knew the actors, but thank you. Matchstick Man. Yeah. I've always liked a good con artist movie. I would say this is on the lesser for me of the con artist movies that I've seen. So
yeah, it isn't as crafty.
Right.
Those are very crafty.
Yeah, I just feel like this one is not that it rushes or anything. I just feel like it doesn't feel we know where he's doing a con, right? But it just doesn't feel like he's, I don't know, the movie doesn't make it feel like it actually is doing a con, or there's not, the stakes aren't really there a lot of the times, you know?
Yeah, no, that's part of the, I think that's part of the brilliance. Like, his entire con is based on faking relationships.
No, I get that.
Right.
And I get that. And he's damn good at it, but
like, he doesn't have to make a fake hospital. He doesn't have to hire 50 people to fool one person. You know,
right.
Like, he just, it's just him, really.
Right. No, very much so. I get that. But at the same time, you can tell that at one point in his life, he was superb at this. And it's just, you can tell now it's that, I don't know if he's just tired or the fact that he has to still deal with a lot of dumb stuff, you know? Like, he's kind of over it. I think that also gives up, his age does also, is like a detriment to his con. Mm-hmm. At least that's the way I saw it.
That's interesting. Okay.
But yeah, overall, I did have fun with it. It was, I liked the second half a lot more than the first half. And I also felt like
The payoffs are also for this part.
Of course, right,
second half,
right, which is the more enjoyable. I actually had fun. I did have fun watching it. But at the same time, I also felt like there's some stuff in the movie that happens that kind of moves his timeline, you know, and makes him make mistakes that I think doesn't see himself or something. And kind of just ends up being what ends up being for the movie.
Okay. I think part of the real brilliance of this movie is that everything feels like not a con movie until he's alone. Yeah. Right? He instantly stops gimping or limping, I should
right.
say.
Mm-hmm.
And he's dealing with other criminals or whatever. Like, the facade drops instantaneously. And as a matter of fact, it shows him to be a heavy drinker, a smoker, a kind of a bitter man. Like, just a soulless individual. It's funny that you say that about his, that you see the craft of, you know, the age is getting to him. I thought that part of the reason, I thought that maybe this movie, having such elderly protagonist, that the movie was gonna focus on that, and it's definitely not a focus. And I didn't see that at all, actually. But I can see what you're saying, that it's definitely getting to him. I mean, all the drinking and smoke definitely is gonna get to him, no matter what. But like, even if it was 50 or 70, it doesn't matter. But I think that this movie is so, it purposely doesn't want to bring into attention that these guys are old. You know, it's like, it just happens to be. like this is his con. Whatever his con was when he was 30, it probably looked different, right? Because he's not playing widowers with a son that he doesn't talk to, that he's lying about. You know, it's like a different con, right? This is just a con of today. Like, he still doesn't stop. She still knows herself. Like, she is very, you know, complacent in the way she knows. She knows everything that she does and seems very assured of herself, which a lot of elderly people are like, because that makes sense. They've been around so long, they pretty much know themselves a lot more. I think this movie make that a plot device or anything that, like, may hinder. Like, for example, I was expecting and glad that I didn't see any scene. It's kind of a spoiler, I guess, but it's a spoiler of something that doesn't happen. Any scene where, like, him or her being too old got in the way, because they're both on even ground that way. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't...
No, I know exactly what you mean. Actually, the movie goes out of its way to tell you that,
yeah,
fuck this age. Like,
right.
I think they do it at least two or three times where they're like, ah, who cares about the age? Like, let's go have fun. Let's do this. No, and I agree. Yeah. And what I was saying is that his craft as in, like, not his age gets to him. I think it's the fact that something in the movie happens that makes him rush to get... You know,
is this spoilery?
Yes, yeah, spoilery. Okay. So I don't want to mention it, but
okay.
Something in the movie happens that rushes to get him to try to, you know, wrap this con up, or okay, move the timeline up a little bit, because I know he's even though he's older, he doesn't care about that. He can do the long con, like, it doesn't matter,
right?
Which he does. I mean, this is going on for, I think, a couple months.
Yeah,
that they're together.
Yeah, that time. Yeah, maybe that's one thing. The timetable of this whole thing, when it starts and where it ends. I don't know how long it's been. It feels like definitely less than a year, maybe a lot less than a year. I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I mean, the movie doesn't matter. It doesn't matter in the end. It's fine. It's not like a big selling point.
No.
But I don't know exactly how long they've been.
Right. So, I just feel like something does. And, like, he thinks it's so easy for him. I'm saying, like, I think something happens when he's rushing it that he doesn't see his own, like...
Oh, like ego, like he's...
very much so, like his ego gets to him.
Too confident.
Know? Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
I can see that for sure.
Right, and you think from somebody who, like...
Right, because she looks so... I mean, she's so innocent, Helen Mirren, in this movie. You know, she's not innocent, but, like, she's a widower. She doesn't... Helen, 100% she lives in a quiet suburb.
We're so used to seeing Helen Mirren in a position of power.
Yeah.
I think it's a very... This is probably one of her, like... offstandish roles,
right,
where she's not, like, in control of everything, even though she's very sure of herself.
Yeah, but she's the lamb.
But she's such a, yeah, she's the lamb.
Yeah,
she's just, you know, been around the block a couple times.
Yeah,
you know,
right, like, she's not surprised when, like, little things happen, like, but also, like, you know, for example, there's a scene, for example, when he first stays over the house. Now, this isn't, like, a sexy thing. He just stays over because he's pretending his back, or his knee, sorry, his knee is fucked up. And Helen Mirren's character.
Which, goddamn, he sells that thing.
He really sells it. Oh, my God, he really sells the shit out of it. And the son, the grandson, is like, what the fuck? No, we can't let him stay, and whatever. But it ends up happening. The next morning, he goes outside and starts smoking, right? And he put on his online presence in the opening credits of the movie that he does. And I was like, is that it? Is that, like, something I should be? Because I noticed it right away. I was like, is that something I should notice? Am I supposed to notice how, like, nonchalantly confident he is that he can pull this off? Or is this, like, or does he not care? Is it not important to her? He realizes it's not important to her? Or did he tell her that?
Right. I mean, but you know what's funny is that...
Isn't this like a slippery slope?
In the beginning of the movie also, everything says, like, she says she's not an alcoholic or she doesn't drink.
Right.
But she has a vodka martini right before she gets there. Right,
yes,
before he gets there, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, I think... It's, yeah, like, you almost...
I noticed that too, yeah.
So you almost feel like, well, we both lied.
Yeah.
You know, so I can talk my way out of things.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like he's done it so much that he can talk his way out of it.
Yeah.
You know, he's got the gift of the gab for sure, but he can talk his way in or out of whatever situation, basically.
Yeah, I agree. Part of the... So how would you... So there's a lot of things that happen in this movie. Did you like how everything unfolded without spoiling anything? If you want to try to convince people to watch this or not, because it seems like we both want to recommend it. So, were you satisfied? I know you said you liked the second half better, but so I assume that means yes. But.
Yes, there's some sludge, for sure in the middle. That's that was okay, especially there's a whole part of a trip that they go on. That little part felt a little bit like I didn't know where we were timeline wise anymore, and it felt a little rushed, especially because the movie doesn't make it. It felt like they were only there for they only knew each other for like 2-3 weeks,
right?
And they're already like taking vacation together, you know. But other than that, yeah, I mean, overall, it kind of everything did kind of unfold pretty well. And I always like seeing Ian McKellen as a kind of villain, so it's cool to see him.
Yeah, him here and Magneto are the only two roles that I can think of. Well, have you seen... I really like the pairing of this director. Director Ian McKellen, this is like their third or fourth movie together. They did the Sherlock Holmes movie where he played the older version of Sherlock Holmes.
In
his waning years. And he's like forgetting the case.
I remember.
Which I thought was good. Not like amazing. But his amazing movie, this is one of the two to four performances I've ever seen in my life. Is Ian McKellen and this guy paired up to do a movie called Gods and Monsters.
I never saw it.
It's so amazing. That's an amazing... I have it on DVD somewhere. It's really an amazing piece of fucking acting I've ever seen. And Ian McKellen motherfucking kills it in so many ways. And it's about... there are different movies, mind you. I like how this guy kind of does a lot of different things. It's about the director of one of the old Frankenstein Hollywood movies. And it's like in his waning years. And he's like... It's about his life. It's a biopic in a way, but it's like so surreal in detail. It's really nice. Anyway, and so I recommend that for him. So I like this pairing. I like these two guys working together. And I think it really shows there's a lot of like sensitivity to the material going on here. We all know it's a crime movie. It's a con movie. But, you know, we both root for the bad guy and root for his victim. And I like that overall. And I myself, as to answer the question I asked you, I did find myself very satisfied with the ending. I have one question before we get into spoilers, and that is regards to that trip you mentioned.
Okay.
In that trip, there's a sudden, like you didn't see it coming as in like you didn't know it was going to happen at all, a flashback. That's pretty extended that happened. I won't tell you details yet, but like did you think that was off-putting, necessary? Did you think that was like a hidden plot, B plot or A plot? What did you think of that?
I actually, what's it called? I didn't know where it was going, so I really thought that it was going like the way of he's conning the audience in that flashback.
Uh-huh.
Or he was actually telling the truth and it's just like a glimpse of his life that we're getting out of Ian McKellen. Character. What's his name in the movie? I forgot.
Roy.
Roy, right.
Well, one of them.
Yeah. Well, yeah. One of his names. What he uses the most, anyways. That we get out of Roy, that he has this scene. I really enjoyed that scene, actually. It worked out really well because it was like a turning point in the movie where you could have seen the movie just kind of ending there. But at the same time, you could... or not ending there, but ending very close to there, should I say. But at the same time, it feels like this scene is the scene that kind of cements him and what's it called? Cements his decision at the same time and kind of just like knows that he doesn't need to, what's it called? That he's kind of got it. He's like completely sure of himself after this.
Right.
Yeah. So I did like his scene overall though.
Yeah. I did too, especially when... what it says about what happens after.
Yeah, exactly. Very much so.
It's very good foreshadowing to like prep you.
Right.
So you don't get hit by that
twist. It was a good twist, though. Yeah. I didn't expect it at all. I mean,
technically, that first flashback scene, which is like halfway through the movie, when they take this vacation trip to Germany, it's technically a twist itself right there. It's like a character twist on a character, right? On the main character. But it isn't like a real one or anything. But it does feel that way, and it does prep you for the ending. Anyway, let's get into spoilers. We want to talk about it. For The Good Liar, starting right now.
Seems like you've had quite a past.
Enough to last several lifetimes. In just a blink, your life's changed forever.
You
know, it's very peculiar doing things you'd never imagined. Secrets between you, God, the devil, and the dead.
You don't know him!
Yeah. So who's the good liar?
Well, clearly she is. I mean, he was never...
Never even caught a fucking wind.
No,
he was... Caught a whiff, nothing.
I didn't either.
I didn't either at all.
I started towards the end, sure, but not like I was suspecting for sure.
So I have a question.
Like when she was like playing, she looked like she was playing a little coy, like she was also pretty excited to like trick him during the meeting when all three were sitting on the table. They were about to exchange the info. This is before like... She gets him to put in all his money, which he was hoarding quite a bit.
Are you talking about the scene we just talked
about? The $3 million, yeah. And like there, I was expecting for sure. I'm like, okay, she's conning him. But I knew there was more to it. I just didn't know what. I did not expect that at all.
Yeah.
You know?
That was interesting. I liked how he talked his way out of that whole flashback scene when he's explaining everything.
In Germany?
In Germany, yeah. Okay. I really liked that. It was actually really well done.
Yeah.
Just the whole fact that he's getting caught up. He's getting like, well, we found out that you're lying to us. You've been lying to us this whole time.
Right.
Bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. You're this person. And you can tell like the other shoe drops, right? And you're like, they caught you. But the fact that she plays coy the whole time, like I'm out of it. This was all this guy's idea, right? My grandson's idea of whatever bullshit. Like
that works in so many levels.
Yeah. It worked
for her.
It worked out really well because she always finds him, then he finds her completely like scot-free of, oh, it wasn't your fault, it was just your grandson being extra protective or whatever.
Right, it completely resets the table in her favor, like, because you get, for an audience member, we get to find out this awesome thing about this Roy character, that he's actually German, during World War II, he switched, you know, whatever, all that stuff, and that's fucked up, that's crazy, and... It like it plays to, because at this time we think that she's innocent and she doesn't know anything, right? Like she forgives him, which gives him a better like a sense of comfort and security, like a sense of like relaxation. He can relax about this con. Like she just trusts him more, you know, after knowing this harsh truth or whatever. The son gets put down for meddling and whatnot, and also his big reveal of telling his grandmother that, oh my God, look at the secret I found of this boyfriend you have. And it's like it all benefits everyone in the exactly way she wanted, Betty.
Yeah, very much so.
But what did you think of her flashback? Right? So
that was the one. So I knew that.
Yeah, that's
I knew
that she left field.
So I knew right away. See, the movie gives away some things in the at the end. This is where I'll tell you when he starts rushing things.
Yeah.
But or at least when I think he starts rushing things. The movie gives away at the end, like he's obviously done with this, and he does everything, like he says the I love you to her. He's like very, very extra. He feels like he's so confident with her. Yeah. Right at that last day that he's about to leave her.
Mm-hmm.
All that phone call, like, you know, shouldn't you... Like, she sets him up for the phone call. Like, you got that phone call. What was it? Oh, it was my son. It was, like, all this happenstance.
Yeah, he
like,
didn't want... He could have not gone, but like, she egged him on. No, continue the con. What are you doing?
Right, exactly. Right. But it was, like, the moment right after the deposit was sent, it was, like, you need to get out of there right away. It was, like, well, dude, like, what does it matter? You could probably milk it for a week.
Yeah.
Like,
I see. This is the point.
So, this is where he rushes himself. And because he rushes himself, right? But at the same time, since she's conning him, she's rushing him.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, she's like, you got to get this over with.
Right. You got to see your son.
You got to see your son.
She even kind of placates, like, oh, I can go with you. And then he says, no, she doesn't bring it up again because she doesn't want to go with him.
You notice, like, you notice that she's acting different as he's acting different.
Yeah, definitely.
But he never notices that she's acting different.
No, he's because he wants to get out.
Because he wants to get out, right? And then you know that she knows at one point.
Yeah.
The movie kind of like makes it a little obvious that you know that she knows. You just don't know
the extent.
The extent.
You didn't know that he was being conned.
Right, and then when you get that flashback, you're like, oh, shit. You know,
yeah, from that first day they were being. It's not. I thought it was going to be like one of those things where she found out halfway through, like that guy that was always like watching him outside his house, like it was involved in some way and figured it out.
Right.
Like during the con, I really thought it was going to be that. I didn't know that it would be a complete reversal.
I thought that it was just like, oh, that's I actually have my whatever.
And it shows that Helen Mirren's still in power, bitch.
Well, I thought it was like it would be like a private investigator looking into him.
Right,
because she had money.
Right.
You know, like, oh, well, I just wanted to do my thorough. I thought that too. Mm-hmm. I didn't think it was going to be connected from like that far back, which was kind of cool. And it was kind of like this thing of like Helen Mirren always had the power. And I was like, ah, damn it, Helen Mirren.
Yeah.
You can't not always be the top person.
Right. The person in power. And also like, even though that did come out of left field, the whole rape background and, you know, how they knew each other as children in a way from World War II, and it fucked up her entire family and her sister's getting killed in that bomb. Like, all fucked up. You know, she blames them all for that, which I understand. Like, all of that is out of left field. Like I said, it wasn't like, I mean, I'm sure there's some little clues, but not really. You know, it wasn't one of those three-step reveals at all.
No.
But the previous flashback of Roy in World War II, when he took Roy's identity, the American, that sets you, because the surprise punch of that history flashback thing sets you up for the Helen Mirren one, for Betty's.
Very much so, yes.
So, like, that's the foreshadowing of that kind of punch, because otherwise, if Roy's flashback hadn't come in earlier, that would have felt cheated. And it almost even felt cheated, but because it did come out of nowhere. But yeah. It did feel like, oh my God, there's like a, they knew it, like, come on. Like,
you know. I also thought the flower thing, they never say it, but I always thought and it wasn't it. It was the lilies.
Yeah.
She gives him this big clue with the lilies.
Yeah.
I thought that it was like she was recording him during all his conversations at home.
Right.
I thought that's what it was. Maybe, yeah. But it wasn't. They never say it was.
Yeah.
It was almost like, it was more of a fact that her name was Lily.
Yeah.
And they always had it in front of her. Like, yeah. I'm Lily.
Yeah.
I'm giving it away to you subconsciously, but you're not. But
which can be a little dangerous, but also it was like, what, how many years ago was that? 60 years ago?
Yeah, forever.
More? Yeah. Less? I don't know.
No, I think he said 60 years ago.
Yeah, that's insane. Like that. I mean, who would remember, right?
No, right.
But yeah, I was really satisfied by that. And once all the pieces fell into place, like how they get the Roy's partner, right, partner in crime, the lawyer involved.
Yeah.
Like, well, yeah, just threaten him. And also, like, I like how the movie has this B-plot of Roy and his partner doing a con on these businessmen with these German guys.
Well, he was already in the middle of a con.
He was in the middle of a con when the movie starts.
When the movie starts, right. So right. That was cool, right. So,
and that I thought it was there to cement us to how he works. Like showing us his duplicitous nature, right? And show how efficient he is by performing this con well. And it was well. I didn't immediately see the Germans being the ones that were in on it when it looked like he was in on it with the other two guys. But there were the two guys being conned. That was interesting. That was nice. And so I saw that. And then and then he kills the fucking guy in the subway. That was crazy.
So yeah. Yeah, that was
nuts. That was nice. But seeing how Helen Mirren used that against Roy for the end finale of his last $100,000. Not only that, but to threaten his partner, the lawyer, to play ball with her in fear of him getting either arrested or killed by these criminals.
Right.
Like that was good. It's like using the buffalo, right? It's like using every bit of the movie to make that ending hit home.
Right.
And that was nice. Right. It was just a constant amount of like knives being twisted inside the gut of this guy. For that end, you know, and he still lived. He lived through all that.
Yeah. So I think, which is shitty, but it's like just deserved, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. And his face looks 10 years older and destitute. He just doesn't have a single thing to say.
No,
you know,
right?
He's so lost. He's exactly. Gone. He's gone.
I think the movie where the switch happens for Roy.
Yeah.
Where he officially gets like too comfortable and just kind of like starts losing his touch is right after that murder. So it's like once he kills the guy,
yeah,
because that's like the big threat. She loses his coat because, you know, he does this whole thing, makes him trip, which was very like you could tell he's done it before. He's killed before.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. He did it too. He did it too fucking slick.
Way too slick.
That was too slick.
Right. No shame. No shame in his game.
And the guy's like 30 years younger too, and he's still. Well, yeah, yeah, surprised him. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Well, the guy probably just didn't anticipate.
Of course not. No.
Right, who would?
No. Who would?
Right.
And that's the thing.
Yeah.
He totally uses his age as like, who would?
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah. So that's, but anyways, after that, like, he meets up with her. And right after that, we get the holiday thing where I feel like he just got so comfortable. He got like, oh, I got this in the bag. Nothing can touch me.
Right.
You know, even when I.
Easy money.
Even when I slip right. up. I fix my mistakes.
Right.
You know, and that's where he gets, like, too comfortable. He doesn't even bother, like, definitely. Minding his P's and Q's anymore or whatever. He just kind of goes through with it. Because, like, he starts at the holiday, I think like, you start noticing, he starts making more facial expressions. Like, oh, you're here. You know, like, mm-hmm. you came to the thing. And, like, in the cab, he obviously looks like, I don't want to be here anymore. Like, his attitude changes more and stuff like that. And it's just visibly to anybody, to everybody.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not just to us where he makes a quick glance or a quick thing and he's kind of hiding it away. He's, you know, he's no longer doing that. He's no longer hiding it anymore, you know. But at the same time, he knows, like, I can get this. At this point, I just wanted this wrapped up.
Yeah. He thought that she was already, like, liking, adoring him, maybe loving him already, and that he could probably get away with a lot more now. Or whatever. He just didn't think enough. Obviously, he was just fucked up. He fumbled. And, had he not, though, it's possible that the millions that her bank account waved under his nose all the time probably would have led him to do other mistakes, even if he was more careful. Like, he probably still would have fallen for it because the millions is... Because she also, the way she let slip that she was actually a lot richer than he even thought was very nice. It made him, like, want to go harder towards her, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's all really nicely planned from her part. And I like the ending of the movie. We do get the two endings of them, right? We're first with him in the hospital, like we said earlier, all haggard and shit. And then we get her and her big-ass family. She was able to kind of rebuild,
yeah,
right, mm-hmm. from the catastrophe of the war. And how she dresses differently. She's like the head of the house. And a little fear of her grandchildren, daughters out in the forest there.
Yeah.
And but she's like feels secure about that as opposed to. The last time that happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's very nice. A very nice mirroring going on there. I liked it. It was a good ending. It makes her the protagonist. I guess it kind of Kaiser Soze seemingly kind of feel.
Kind of, yeah.
Where, like, the main character wasn't Ian McKellen.
Yes.
Right? That kind of feel. Mm-hmm. But I didn't think it felt bad. It felt really, really nice. And I think it would have a happy ending because our main character throughout the movie was this bitter man who sweared all the time through his phone, broke, like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, he was such a bitter fucker. Yeah. He was a bitter fucker.
You know what I think looking back on it, I think the fact that her showing him the money or telling him the money left the con would have been different. The con was different then. Because the con was, I think, it felt like, let her spend her money on me. And I thought that's what he was playing at. I can live this probably like a year, you know, two.
Oh, you thought it was more
comfortable. I thought it was going to be more comfortable. You know, yeah. I can totally just string her along,
right.
Take her for whatever, do what I got to do. But it's, and her saying the money is like, it was too good to pass up.
Yeah.
It's too good to be like, fuck that, let me take something. And I found it funny that I think the guy, his buddy, tries to warn him, like...
Yeah, he does.
Do you want to... Like, you shouldn't take all her money. Leave her with some, right?
Yeah.
I know he's like, are you getting cold feet? He's like, no. He goes, but you should not. I think he's like, you should... I think he was trying to basically go, like, if you go a little nicer on her, like, you can go a little nicer.
She'll give you some mercy.
She'll give you some mercy, right? I think it was kind of like that.
Yeah.
And he was just like, fuck that.
Yeah.
You know, he just didn't care.
No.
And yeah.
That's the thing is that it never bought them. Even though he almost cracked and took her with him to this, or wanted to take her with him to this fake, you know, son meeting in London, or not even that necessarily, but he wanted to stay. She was like, he was like totally like anticipating her to ask so she would stay in that bench. Right, there's one moment, right? The one moment that the movie, if this was a romantic redemption movie, would have done handedly.
Right.
But I'm glad it didn't. But like, but no, he's just a bitter fuck. He never gave a shit. Like, never.
Never
gave
a shit.
He just could not do it. And this isn't his nature. Part of the flashback as a child when he raped her, or even when he took the identity of the guy, which kind of shows him in the best light, but also because he's given the flashback, by the way. God knows how he really was. It just shows, like, he was never, like, he's... He's never been a fucking human being. You know what I mean? Like, it's just...
He was always a little deplorable shit.
He was a deplorable piece of shit.
Yeah.
Always.
Mm-hmm.
Always.
Right.
I mean, those girls just wanted to dance with him. Why does he have to, like, why does he have to act that way?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Anyway, so, like, yeah, he fucking had his just desserts.
He always... I think he felt like he always needed to take from the rich because he was always a poor guy.
Yeah, right? Maybe.
That's what it, that's what it felt like.
One of those self-imposed, like, ideals.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But... And it felt like the world was always after him. He could never man up to his own mistakes or his own things.
Definitely. Yeah. Anyway, but very satisfying movie. Good thriller. Nice little twist. Obviously, if you're hearing this part, then you already know the twist. But if you haven't seen it and you're listening to this, still watch it. It's really fun to see the clues. I kind of want to rewatch it someday. See those clues again. That'd be nice.
I would love to watch
it. The first time he says he's fond of her, seeing what happens in that flashback later.
Yeah, that was a good one. Yeah. I would like to watch that again.
And she's like, oh, fond. Like the way she was. Basically, that's the cards out, right?
Yeah.
Right. All right. So that's it for our review of The Good Liar. We're going to take a break here. When we come back, we'll review our marathon pick here, which is the twin films of, what is it, Ruff?
We have airplane movies.
Airplane movies.
Yeah. So
hijacking airplanes.
Right. Executive Decision and Air Force One.
That's right. So find out what that's about, see how that fares, and stay with us.
Excuse me, sir. May I help you? Sir?
In an age...
Excuse me, sir. May I help you?
When terrorism knows no boundaries... And the level of threat...
I have a message for the American president.
...knows no limits.
I am in control of Flight 343.
Sir, I don't think this is about hostages.
What are you talking about?
A shipment of the nerve toxin DZ-5 was hijacked.
Are you saying nerve gas is on board?
Yes, sir, I am. They plan to use the DZ-5 and the airplane together to detonate here over Washington.
When global response is routine,
London is demanding immediate action.
There's a hatch on the belly of the 747 near the nose.
We could dock there.
I know you wrote the book on assaulting hijacked aircraft, but this is 5 miles above the Earth.
I don't think we have any other options.
And advanced technology.
Who's this? 007?
Can accomplish miracles.
What are you doing up here?
Who the hell else is going to do it? You?
I'm opening the outer hatch.
A life or death decision.
I hope there's a good movie on this flight.
For 400 hostages in a plane.
Keep it going.
Or 40 million civilians on the ground.
You can forget Washington. There's enough nerve agent here to wipe out half the eastern seaboard.
Will come down to a choice between the unthinkable.
The Pentagon is going to shoot us down.
And the impossible.
I'll reach our airspace in 85 minutes.
Just gotta be closed down. We'll lose both planes.
Order the F-14s to intercept the 747.
Communist radicals hijack an airplane with and threaten the United States to negotiate for their demands. That's one movie.
Vegas.
Vegas. Okay. Terrorists seize control of an airliner, intelligence analysis. What's it called? Accompanies
analyst. You mean
analyst? Yeah, my apologies. Analyst accompanies a commando unit to take down the terrorists on board.
These plot synopses are like plot synopses for movies that are out in theaters now. that don't tell you enough. You
know, I even had to edit that one. Man, these are rough to make. If I had time, these are rough to make on the fly.
So which is which, folks? Which is Executive Decision? And which is Air Force One? Obviously, we know the answer. But enough of that.
Yeah,
enough
of that. That being said,
right.
So our two movies here are Air Force One and Executive Decision.
Yeah.
I think they came out in the same year. If not, they may just be a little bit apart from each other, like a year apart.
Yeah,
that's possible. Air Force One came out in 1997, and Executive Decision came out in 96.
Yeah, it did.
Okay. So let's talk about Executive Decision because I have it in front of me. This is directed by Stuart Baird, written by Jim Thomas and John Thomas. Okay, brothers, I guess.
Thomas.
Sure. Starring Kurt Russell, Halle Berry,
sexy.
Steven Seagal, John Leguizamo.
Oh my God, that's right. I forgot.
Oliver Platt, Joe Morton.
I thought I was so young.
I know. B.D. Wong.
B.D. Wong also, Jurassic Park, and also Mr. Robot,
thank you so much for saying that.
What? Did you try to picture him where you know him?
No, I knew where he was from. Okay. I just thank you for saying. And then we have Air Force One. What's it called? Directed by Wolfgang Peterson.
Yeah.
Strong name. And
he did a lot of movies, you know.
Yeah, I know. It was a strong name, though, Wolfgang. And written by Andrew W. Marlowe. Only one person. Starring the famous Harrison Ford, Gary Oldman, Glenn Close, Wendy Crewson, Guilfoyle?
Yeah.
Sure. Xander Berkeley, the great William H. Macy.
Yes.
Dean Stockwell, and I'll mention the girl's name also, Leslie Matthews, which is the daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I already did say Dean Stockwell already. Never mind. We'll leave it at that. Let's quickly say that the clear winner here is Air Force One.
Yes. I mean, right. That's what we believe.
At least we believe that, right?
Yeah,
100%, right? Like, there's no doubt in our minds.
Well, I would say that the margin, like, if there's, like, how okay, it's not just that Air Force One wins already in our hearts.
Yeah, in our minds,
In our minds, and we're going to analytically speak about them. But I think it wins probably, not like a landslide win, but they win by, like, quite a number of points.
I mean, I would say the fact that no one, you watch the Super Bowl, and you know the winner.
Uh-huh.
The loser does not fucking matter.
Okay.
And I think this is the case in this aspect, is that the winner clearly is Air Force One, and that bitch is on reruns. Fucking TBS.
Oh, you mean even history TNT, agrees with you.
Even history agrees with us, right? And then its executive decision is just like, it may be on Netflix if you want to watch it, I guess.
Right. It was. Right. It still is.
Thank God.
I know, right? We're going to find this fucking movie. Right.
So, there's that.
Yeah. I guess there is that. But they both have their things, and they both have something that, I mean, again,
they both have big actors too.
They both have big actors, but they both have, each movie has something over the other.
Okay.
Air Force One has more things over Executive Decision, but Executive Decision does have some things over Air Force One. So that's just that's my general thoughts on this.
Yeah.
But let's talk about similarities.
Okay.
This is your thing. So why don't you start?
Okay. Yeah. The very intro of these movies are exactly the same.
Exactly the same.
I mean, they almost said, that title font is amazing. I'm just going to make mine in white and not in neon green. And you're like, oh, okay, yeah, sure. You know, something to that extent, right?
They both open with like a case file, a scenario.
Right. Yeah.
Kind of like the opening of Terminator.
Right.
And there's a secret Black Ops mission happening.
Very much so.
Where they kidnap or they infiltrate a place that's filled with terrorists and they kidnap their leader. They take their leader.
Well, that's an Air Force One.
Yes.
And Executive Decision, they're trying to get DZ.
Right, trying to get a gas, a certain, like, very potential lethal gas, but at a place they're not supposed to with potential terrorists.
Very much so.
So those are the similarities, and that also tells the difference right there, because one is about the leader of this this terrorism rebellion, whatever, and the other one is just looking for weapons, which probably what tells you right away, like, Air Force One already getting shit done. Because the Executive Edition didn't find shit, so they're already starting off losing, you know, right away in their openings.
Very much.
The American in this parallel timeline suck compared to the...
You know what? I will say something about Executive Decision, and talking about intelligence, and I would say overall, like, it talks a lot about how our future is going to be told, or not told, but just in general, how intelligence plays a gigantic role in our future.
Yeah.
And which is Kurt Russell's job.
Yes.
And then as well as how terrorism plays, this type of terrorism plays a gigantic role also in our future.
I would say that Executive Decision may be the most prescient and most logical.
Yeah, very much so.
So like I was going to say, that was one of the things that movie has over Air Force One.
Yeah.
Because Air Force One is about America, fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah.
like Air Force One has an idealistic government that clearly does not exist here.
Yeah.
But like has almost like a West Hold Wing on. Quality Gl- kind Gl- of
idealism. Very much so, yeah. Glenn Close is the vice fucking president and it's
amazing.
A it's a woman.
And I want her to vice president me all day.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Right.
So that's not a sexual dig. I'm just meaning he's super competent up there in that movie.
Very,
yeah. Right. So, yeah, I mean, it's an idealist version that will never exist probably, but, like, it's America, fuck yeah. You know, with the president fucking taking out terrorists.
Yeah.
I mean, he does better than the two presidents from the two heavier action movies from our last twin films thing. He's more successful 20 years before White House Down and Olympus Has Fallen.
Yeah.
You know? Just saying.
That's true.
He stays behind for his family.
Yeah.
And he kills motherfuckers. They don't even know he's there until like way later in the movie.
Right. So late in the movie.
Right. They think he's some agent. Some competent agent.
Yeah. Which is totally totally believable.
Right. I mean, because it's Harrison Ford. That's why it's believable. He's a clear presence agent guy. Danger.
Yeah.
He's Solo. All right. So, I mean, we kind of skewed off there, but let's talk about another similarity.
We did.
Both take planes in planes.
What else you got for me?
Well, I just said one. They both take place in planes. Primarily the plane. With equal parts, like showing, oh my God, what's going on down there? How is the demands going? You know, the ground level, like the DC conference room stuff.
Okay.
Both very similar. Although I would say, though, Air Force One does have a lot more people in that room.
Yeah.
Like this one looked like they went to some producer's office from the studio that they filmed it. And Air Force One, they had a big fucking room on there.
Right.
So
right.
It looked like a legit room.
It looked more of a war room esque.
Yeah.
War room. Right. Okay. That's good. Let's see. Similarities. See, those are differences.
Okay, we can go to a difference if you have one.
Well, I have a difference. There is no traitor in executive decision, and there is an Air Force One.
Yeah. Yes.
So we have a insider traitor in. Although there's in a similar aspect, just to say it, there is like there's a sleeper agent in the first one, in executive decision.
That's their version of a twist.
Of a twist, right?
Right.
In comparison to this one, which I think Air Force One does a good job because you kind of forget.
Yeah, because they show you in the beginning. Because he's part of the reason why they get the weapons on Air Force One to begin with.
Right.
So you know who is the traitor already.
You should, or early on. You should.
As the takedown
it's
happens.
It's a hint, right?
Right. And then, but we do get fooled. If you have seen it, I mean, we saw it trillions of times.
Right, exactly.
But like, if it's the first time, maybe you forget by the time the end happens.
Yeah, because by the end it happens, you're like, shit, we're about to rock and this is awesome. We're doing great, you know?
Right, right.
So.
But also that guy's face. I mean, he's from 24,
but
he looks so bad. He looks like a villain. He also looks like the White House Down villain guy. Like, why would you trust him for anything?
Never.
I wouldn't trust him to park my car. But in the here's a bad thing though. While executive decisions like twist on like, oh, who's the actual guy who's gonna punch the code to activate the arm the weapon or whatever, like they kind of fucked it up because they were showing us heavily that guy who wasn't the guy before they even knew that there was one of the passengers has the ability to detonate.
They were
and that's some bullshit. That's the gaslighting us.
Yeah,
that's gaslighting the audience. that's tricky. That's too brazen of an attempt to try to trick us. You know what I mean? So they didn't do it right.
No, they didn't.
But it was still a twist.
Yeah, and poor guy who lost all his diamonds.
Yeah, right. He was just worried about why we keep so stupid. Why does he keep checking? Stop checking them.
Right.
Like, what the fuck? They're there. They were there the last time you saw them.
Right.
No one, you know. So I would say that while the twist worked better because I didn't know that was coming, it was like. They gaslighted me. They were gaslighting.
Yeah,
so. Both have big action stars attached as the main leads.
Okay.
But one of them, I would say even both maybe, and both are like in positions where they wouldn't do violence. Like the president doesn't fight.
No.
He has Secret Service men to fight and die for him and stuff. Same thing with this guy, Poindexter analyst with the glasses, Kurt Russell, is, we know him as, you know, Escape from New York. Is that him? Yeah. But like at the same time, though, in this movie, he's not a fighter. As a matter of fact, they make it a point, too, a little bit. I think they make fun of him for that. I think Steven Seagal makes fun of him, in a way, for that. Or like digs at him a little bit. So there's another similarity right there. A difference, though, is that one plane lands, the other does not.
I mean, yeah, completely demolished.
Yeah.
Similarities. Both our heroes do fly the plane at one point.
Ooh.
Okay,
that's a good one.
So, because you said one plane lands, the other one doesn't. A difference is since you said like one plane lands, the other one doesn't. One causes massive destruction to its surroundings when it does land. Right, mm-hmm. Massive. I'm talking about like the whole airport is fucked.
Yeah,
right. And the other one just fucking crashes and burns.
Yeah. The one that has the highest explosion does the minimal damage.
Right.
That's a weird dissimilar difference.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good. I like that. Anyway, I don't know if I would have thought of that one. All right. Both has a very big cast of fucking actors that either are big at that point or they make it big shortly after.
Yeah.
Steven Seagal was very huge. Kurt Russell was pretty huge already. Halle Berry, maybe not so much.
Maybe not so much, no.
No, no.
I agree.
Yeah. It was way before Monsters
William H.
Ball.
Macy,
William H. Macy. I mean, I don't think Fargo had come out.
It's 97.
Oh, then it did come out
already. It did, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, but still. Oh, you betcha. But yeah, they have a lot of that going around. I would say, dude, as far as villains go, Gary Oldman wins, man.
Yeah, I would say so.
But they both have like extremist villains, and both have non-leaders who are leaders.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like everyone listens to Gary Oldman and whoever is the guy from Executive Decision. I'm sorry, I don't have his name. They all listen to him. And while they're similar in that they're leaders of this operation, and they certainly act like they're the leader because they're the main villain in the movie.
Yeah.
But they're not. They actually have actual leaders that they want to, that they uphold to. But Gary Oldman doesn't betray that leader. The difference is that this guy does.
Yes.
Right.
Very much. Oh, another difference here.
It ain't no Radic.
No. The difference here is going back to their mission is that they both accomplished their mission.
Yeah.
Right. The difference is as one accomplishes, also fails. Right. They get him out, but then they manage to kill the guy. Right. That's in Air Force One.
Right.
The other one, he gets out, but the other mission, which is they're about to commit.
They're going to destroy Washington, D.C.
They're going to go Washington. Yeah, exactly. Right. They're going to go the extra level and still, now that they got their demand, still send a message.
Right.
Right.
So they both succeed in their primary mission that they say, but not their secondary one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's interesting, though, I think they're. What I did appreciate for, like I said, the Executive Decision was the fact that it goes into the fact that they're even their own people were like, yeah, suicide bombers, or no. Like, even his own people were like, no. And he's like, yeah, but I'm that determined that I'm willing to do it.
Right. He was the ISIS version of everyone around him.
Al-Qaeda,
and the world thought that he was, like, they're already pretty extreme, but he was more extreme than that.
Yeah.
With an X only, no EA, you know, just X and then Tream.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, the whole idea of the suicide thing also, I don't know how influential or not. I mean, Executive Decision wasn't super influential, but it was a big movie still. But I wonder how much of that idea was around in the consciousness of people in the world of suicide bombers and stuff. Because, you know, the idea of, you know, the suicide, you think of the suicide fighters in World War II, right? The Japanese and stuff. I mean, they did exist.
Yeah.
There's a version of that everywhere. But this one, you know, I guess it was still too new. It wasn't really that known. Yeah. Now it's like super common.
I have another similarity.
Yeah.
They both use guns in the airplane when it's just a really bad idea.
Yeah, I would say so.
We see the results of that in Executive Decision in comparison to that we don't see it in Air Force One. Air Force One, you almost feel like it's an airplane, but an armored airplane. So, like, it could take the shot, but in reality, it can't. It's still a fucking airplane, right?
Yeah.
So it needs to have its things to fly.
Its engine and rudders and stuff.
Right, well, just the lightweight net is also of the fact that it needs to fucking fly, right? But in Executive Decision, they're just shooting willy-nilly. No one ever brings, in any of these movies, brings up the fact that this cabin could be depressurized and they could just crash these planes.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, something that in the future we always get in a movie about how why people use knives or why people use something else, or
right,
whatever the case is.
Yeah, it's funny. Action movies always have to like learn from their successors, you know, in that way. Like the 90s had all these errors and stuff, but they also taking back from the 80s errors. You know, they made things better from like previous action, right, and so on and so forth. And up to now, we're like, man, we can't even have a gun on the plane.
Yeah.
It's unfeasible. Who would do that? It'd be stupid.
Right.
Right. Like you just cut that middleman out.
Yeah.
They both, I would say that they both, here's a difference, maybe. Oh, no, maybe not. Similarity. I'll go with similarity. They both use, I don't want to say flight attendants necessarily, but people who work in the plane to advance the thing. For example, like Halle Berry is a flight attendant that Kurt Russell's team uses to actually get a hold against this whole thing. They use her a lot more for sure. While in Harrison Ford in Air Force One uses that one lady from his staff to send that fax.
Right.
And that was just that one scene.
Yeah.
But it was crucial to get their plane down. I mean, hers are probably more crucial. But anyway, to save everyone else.
Yes.
Right? On the parachutes. But here's the thing, though. This is more a criticism on the movie itself and Air Force One. When they were able to all get out, and obviously the William H. Macy, and I forget who else, they're like, oh, we're staying with you, President, right, Mr. President, right? We're going to stay with you. Why didn't the traitor leave then?
Because he wanted to kill him.
No, I don't think he would have wanted to kill him. The cover's blown. It's super blown. Why not stay? Why not get out when he could?
Was his cover blown?
No, his cover wasn't blown. Not his. Not the traitor's yet. Why didn't he get out when the hostages were all leaving? Not the first family. Just the regular hostages.
No, I know that. I don't know.
He could have.
Yeah, I guess.
But he was like, no, we're staying with you. Like, Mr. You know, like, why? Just leave.
I don't know.
He would have gone out scot-free.
Yeah, I guess.
You know, because they were wondering, like, oh, someone definitely betrayed them. They set it down the ground, Glenn Close at it, the vice president. But, like, she mentioned, like, oh, yeah, someone betrayed them. We don't know who to trust and all that. And so the audience knows. But, like, if no one else knows, if they're all going to die up there.
Yeah, you're right, I guess.
Seems kind of weird. Maybe he's trying to, like, save face, but, like, why risk it?
Maybe, I don't know.
I don't know. That was weird. But another difference is that executive decision is way less action.
Yeah.
They have a mid-air bombing thing of a gas plane blowing up in there and shit.
Very much so, yeah.
And Air Force One crashes.
It's more like a thriller thing.
There's more shootouts. The takeover is much more violent in Air Force One. It's definitely more of a crowd pleaser. Executive decision is pretty much like more, I mean, again, more maybe more rational because they just take it over quick and painless kind of thing. Yeah. And they just take over, right. You know.
Did we mention the big difference is that there's an actual president in one of the movies and there's none? In the
right. Other? No, we didn't say that difference yet. But yeah, there's no president executive. He's like off on vacation. Yeah. I don't know. They say golfing. He's off somewhere. Golfing. Camp David. Camp Daving it up.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, but he's not around. I wonder why they did that. I wonder. Yeah, you know, what do you think?
I don't know, but they were like, now that it's entering U.S. airspace, now it's an executive decision. They say it in the movie.
Yeah, I know.
So now he has to. Now they actually have to bring it to the president.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, God, he doesn't know?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Both involve fighter airplanes, like doing something that it's against their prerogative. One is shooting Air Force One, you know, with missiles and stuff. And the other is destroying the plane full of hostages to save the rest of the, like.
Yeah.
They both have that thing in there.
Oh, they also both, what's it called? They both do communication in its own way, one with the fax, right?
And oh, I see.
Get to communicate. Yeah. And the other one uses Morse code to communicate that they're there on the plane to the fighter pilots.
That they made it through.
That they made it through, exactly.
Yeah. You think it's a big tease having Steven Seagal, like, almost in the fucking plane, but he doesn't actually go in? Is that some sort of, like...
I think it is. I think it's a waste of talent, also. I think it's just the fact that... Yeah. I don't know. I think they probably saw it as a... If we keep him on there, mm-hmm. We diminish probably most of the movie.
Maybe.
Because then you don't have the Kurt Russell role of him taking over almost as a leader. Because why would he need to?
Right. No, I understand why they couldn't have the ops leader on the plane.
Yeah.
But, like, why hire Steven Seagal to not do action?
Right, I know.
That's what I'm saying.
It is really weird.
You know what I'm saying? I'm more like saying as a movie, not as a story.
Oh,
as
yeah.
A story that works out.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
By the way, a straw saving the world.
Right.
Oliver Platt, man. So young. Took me a second to recognize him, actually.
Now, Air Force One ends with them just on the plane, right? And they said now the president has landed on XYZ plane or whatever they're called.
Yeah, the
and then he says air now carrier. It's called Air Force One.
Right, because he's on it.
Because he's on it, exactly.
Right, that's how they call it, yeah.
Yeah. Is that how it ends, right? Is that,
and yes. Just kind of, and it ends there.
It ends pretty much right there. So the difference is, one, since he obviously lands a plane... Mm-hmm. Ends very Die Hard-esque.
Yes, it felt like Die Hard.
Thank you so much. Okay.
Yes, it did. It even looked cold, like Die Hard.
It did, right?
I think it was.
With the whole dating thing, he even says, like, this line, would you like to go for coffee or something? Yeah. So familiar. Yeah,
it felt like Die Hard.
Yeah, very
much
so.
It stole it from Die Hard, probably. John McTiernan, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, that was good. But, I don't know. Talk about an experience, like a dramatic experience going on a date based on that. I don't think it's going to work out so long, probably. It's going to be a fleeting emotion. What else? What about casualties? They both have similar casualties? I mean, I would say Air Force One has probably more casualties, right?
I guess, yeah, overall.
I'm saying of good people, quote-unquote good people.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. What I like also is there's reality aspects to both of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like the reality aspect of, I guess, how procedure and protocol happen. Like mm-hmm. there's an air marshal in this plane.
Yeah, right.
Things like that of nature. There's a manifest and it would show there's an air marshal. Although you shouldn't fucking have that. I don't think they have that anymore.
Right, it's all hush hush.
Right, it's all hush hush now, right? Things of that nature and all this stuff. Don't get me wrong. The flight attendants know who the fuck the air marshal is, right?
Right.
And then and so on. And then in Air Force One, you have this procedures of, what's it called? Of how the airplane works overall, how it does its countermeasures, how mm-hmm. it does is this,
mm-hmm.
What's it called? And how it has its own like built-in sections for like tours,
because yeah.
people who can fly with them, which I don't think they ever allow anymore, or I haven't heard of
anything. I don't think so, yeah.
If they even did. And just how the plane works overall in general. So it's interesting, yeah. There's little caveats overall, like little
definitely. Things. But I also think that what Air Force One also has over executive decision is that the novelty of being on a specialized, one-of-a-kind airplane
very much so, yeah.
feels different than just the current airliner.
Well, he's got two of them, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, whatever. You know what I mean. Find two-of-a-kind airplane. And so they play into that. For example, like you think of White House down on the Olympus has fallen. They play into the most secure building in the world, right? Yeah. Or in their nation,
yeah.
right? And what they have to do to infiltrate it and safeguards that they have to bypass or use to their advantage.
They're both trying to do...
Air Force One has the same thing.
Right, yeah. They're both here trying to take advantage of hostages and put America in a pickle, right? Mm-hmm. And this one, just one picks the President of the United States to do that too, right?
Yeah.
And then the other one picks just an airliner.
Yeah.
You know, American passengers, but we don't want to lose American passengers, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we don't want to, but also, like, it's not the president.
You can shoot it down, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was the whole point.
That was the point.
Whole the ending. Also, I would say that the violence or the action in executive decision comes in spurts. Like, it really, when they're going to ready to go down there, and like, we got the bombs going thing, and then the guys, you know, telling Oliver Platt how to do this, and like, they're gearing up. It's like a giant tease when they have to stop and go back and retract everything. And, you know, like, oh, shit, we got it wrong and all that. Whatever. And then he goes down there, actually starts the operation and go down there and try to take them all. Because the terrorists don't know that they're there until, like, very late in the movie.
Very late in the movie.
And then the action just fucking starts. The Air Marshal dies. All of a sudden, terrorists are dying. Everyone left and right.
He doesn't die. He gets shot. But, yeah.
So Air Force One has action throughout.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. And it has that final stamp of action, too, with the traitor.
Yeah. That's the beginning of the movie. That's the big difference, also, is that... Yeah. They take the action is like the threat is they almost land the plane. They're about to they almost don't succeed in you know. There's like that little thing where they just don't know, you know. So that was interesting. What's funny is that there's a lot of things that happen that's just an executive decision, all that stuff that happens, like take over the plane.
Yeah.
So many deterrents that shit would never happen anymore.
Oh yeah.
So many.
It's way different.
Yeah.
Way different. Right. Different world.
Different world completely.
Essentially, yeah. I mean, I remember going on planes at that age. I don't remember anything about it because I was very young in the 90s, but I remember it feels differently. Sure,
yeah.
Not now. But I would say that the whole thing about the action waiting until the end and keeping silent for the most part, you know, this crew of Americans trying to take back the plane with the explosive in it or whatever is more logical. But it isn't as entertaining as the more illogical Air Force One, which is more entertaining.
Right.
So yeah, for those reasons and probably other tidbits more, Air Force One wins. And Harrison Ford is also like, he's such a, he feels like a president.
He does.
He does feel kind of presidential.
Right. They do a good job of also giving him a backstory where he is a war hero or a war
they mentioned that,
veteran. So he does actually know combat, you know, like it's not mm-hmm. like he's just some random, you know, guy who takes boxing.
Right.
Like in Olympus Has Fallen.
Right. But it's funny how the executive decision needed that opening Kurt Russell intro of him flying that charter plane, like practicing for that, you know, foreshadowing the fact that he's going to have to land the plane at the crucial time, you know, Whereas this guy was a throwaway line of him being in the war and flying planes there that he was able to even try to stabilize it to begin with. Right. And it wasn't like a big deal when he did.
No,
it.
No.
So there's another difference slash similarity.
You make one mistake! We killed my pilot, Mr. President! No one left to fly the plane! I'm no parachute! Whatever happens, you lose, and I win.
Get off my plane.
All right, so that is it for, I think, right?
I think
for
so, yeah.
Air Force One versus Executive Decision. Tell us what you think of this, and the next one is coming up very soon. You have been listening to Another Movie Podcast. If you want to follow us, you can follow, well, me personally, I should say, on Twitter and on Letterboxd at Armin Filmmaker, which is Filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. Ralph?
You can follow me on Twitter at Gamer Ralph. That's with two R's and an F.
Damn right. Let's see here. We come out every other weekend, so next time we're going to be doing Knives Out. I do want to see the Ryan Johnson movie.
Knives Out.
It'll definitely be out by then. Check it out. We're also going to be reviewing The Irishman, which will be out on Netflix by the time the next show comes out. That's what they said, so I'm really hoping for it. I have some backups, though, if I need to. One of them being probably Parasite or something else. But The Irishman is Martin Scorsese's latest film. It looks like a big epic. Can't wait to see it. And our versus, it's going to be The Illusionist versus The Prestige.
I was wondering if you were going to do this one. I was really curious.
Let's do magic, Ralph. Let's All right. do some magic. So that's going to be the next one. Check it out. Those are early 2000s movies. The Prestige, here goes again, The Prestige and The Illusionist. Both, I mean, one has a much bigger director nowadays, but both had pretty standout directors. They both have big starring people in there, big actors. So check that out in advance for that versus. Now, we'll see you guys in 2 weeks. Until then, I am Oscar.
I'm Ralph.
Later. Arrivederci!